Tuxk Newsom, Slama, thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Boston Christopher. Today, we chat with Nami Juno about Mental Health Awareness Month, which begins tomorrow, May 1st. First Friday previews continue with Alaska Robotics featuring artist Rob Royce, who has put together a special exhibit, and writer Bridget Smith, who will be signing copies of her book, Godsend. Tomorrow also marks the first Made in Alaska Juno Market. Held at Sea Alaska Plaza, this market will have certified Alaska-made goods, including jewelry, fiber arts, skincare products, and more. Pretty cool. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. But first, let's have a listen to this week's Thinkit Word of the Week.
You're listening to KTOO's Thinkit Word of the Week. And this week's word comes from Kushtak U Bilfasa. The word this week is Yana 8.
Yana 8.
That means wild celery. And here's a sentence.
Yana 8.
Wild celery is very good. Let's hear it again.
Yana 8.
Wild celery. Gunas Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kushtak O'ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihua Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Akkwan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay. And of course, you can also listen online at kto.org or tune into our live stream on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram. We're everywhere. NAMI Juno's mission is to provide education, advocacy, support, and public awareness so individuals affected by mental illness can build better lives. And May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And I'm joined now in the studio by Danny Alston from NAMI. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'igudi. Thank you so much, Danny. It's great to have you here. Wasiati, how are you today?
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Excellent.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, that's so good. It's a little rainy. Is it raining out right now still? I haven't been outside.
Not really? It's cleared up a little bit.
Okay,
the
snow, that's good.
The sun's trying to peek out. As long as there's no snow, I think we're feeling pretty good.
Yeah, more of the snow was melting on my street this morning. I was like, yay, keep going, mm-hmm. please. So let's talk a little bit about, let's remind folks first, like what NAMI does. NAMI is a national organization. I think it's in 49 of the 50 states, I believe.
I believe you're correct.
And so what do you do as NAMI Juno?
So like you said, NAMI is a national organization. It's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And NAMI Juno is an affiliate of NAMI Alaska and therefore NAMI Juno. So we're a subsection.
Okay.
And we support our community by providing suicide prevention trainings, mental health trainings for youth and adults alike. We have queer programming for youth and adults. We have support groups, free peer-led support groups, such as our DBT Skills Work Group, Creative Growth, Connections, Family Support, and Survivors Support Group for individuals who have lost someone to suicide. Mm. And we just try to support the mental health of our community here in Juneau and Southeast.
I love that. And it seems to me that, at least from my perspective anyway, over the last, 10 years, maybe 15 years, it seems like we've become more in tune a little bit with like what mental health is and what we should be doing for our for everyone's mental health. So what does, I guess what I'm wondering is, in terms of what you all do at NAMI Juneau, what is mental health awareness, or what does mental health, what is that in your mind over there at NAMI Juneau?
Sure.
Yeah.
So mental health, I would define it as being able to think clearly and coherently, not getting stuck in a rut. For me personally, I take Mental Health Awareness Month as not only Mental Health Awareness Month, but mental health awareness to be recognizing when my depression symptoms are starting to manifest.
Okay.
And then addressing those appropriately with coping skills, talking to my support group, asking for help, always super hard, and just recognizing when we're not feeling our best.
Because I know, like, I know there's, you know, sort of standard people say, oh, I'm having a mental health day. Like, they're trying to take care of themselves, right? Like, trying to say, okay, the world is a little too much for me today, whatever it might be. I need to lay in bed with my Haagen-Dazs and just chill out, right? Like, there's that sort of mental health. But then, like you mentioned, there's depression and anxiety, and there's, you know, suicidal ideation. There's different things that come up that I guess, you know, if, because I don't think of, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, obviously, and I'm not a specialist like you all over there at NAMI, but I think of illness makes it sound like it's a bad thing, you know? And I think like it's a struggle that a lot of people have that may, then it's one of those things where someone was on the show recently talking about sort of invisible disabilities, right? Like invisible sort of things with mental health. You may not notice something going on with somebody, right? So do you all deal with like, the signs, like if you have a child or if you have a partner or if you have a friend that I could learn information like, oh, I'm seeing something in my friend that may be invisible but could be something that has to do with mental health.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So some of the trainings that we have that kind of fall in line with what you're talking about is recognizing those signs and symptoms of ourself and maybe in someone else. Kind of falls in line with our suicide prevention trainings, like we have Together We Are Strong, which takes a, which looks at supporting peers to support each other when someone's not acting quite right. Maybe they're saying something along the lines of, everything's too much, or I don't want to be here anymore. Those statements that maybe they're not really sure that they're comfortable enough telling you, I'm not feeling where I'm supposed to, like, feeling well. And then we also have safety planning workshops, which help us to, when you do a safety plan, it helps you to recognize when maybe you're not feeling your best and how to respond appropriately. Because when you're in the middle of feeling anxiety, depression, those two right off the top of my head, because those are symptoms that can also relate to other mental illnesses as well, like schizophrenia, bipolar, like they typically have similar feelings, which those are serious mental health issues that also, I am not a doctor, so definitely reach out to your medical providers, your counselors to get those supports. But it when you're in those moments, it's sometimes really hard to recognize that you're in those moments, or it's hard to care that oh, I've left all of my dishes undone for the last 3 weeks. I've just been piling and piling and piling. I don't care.
Mm.
But if you recognize early, oh, I haven't taken a shower in 2 days.
Mm.
Ooh, this is probably not a great, I'm probably not in the best mindset.
Yeah.
Maybe I should reach out to a close friend of mine, or if you have a counselor or a medical provider, go to one of our support groups, connect with someone who understands what you're going through. That can be really helpful. And I think this is me speaking, not me, Juno.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about mental illness, it's also coming from a westernized perspective of the medical model of mental health.
Right.
And when we talk about mental health, this is kind of going outside of the scope of what you just asked, but mm-hmm. when we talk about mental health, there are biological impacts on mental health. There's social impacts of mental health. So it's not just a nature versus nurture. It is coming together. So there might be a medical intervention that's needed.
Mm.
So that's where that illness or that disease comes from.
I see. Yeah, I was just curious because I feel like as we all get more aware,
mm-hmm.
Not just of what these medical illnesses actually are, but also just in our own lives, like it's so easy to push it away or push it down or say, or somebody tells you like, oh, just get over it. Or, you know, when really it's like you know, having empathy for where people are and being able to recognize not just in yourself, but in your close friends or your partner or your children or whatever, that, you know, maybe it's something that is happening and
mm-hmm.
it's not, you know, a lot of time, like I grew up with just deal with it. You know,
Me too. Just
deal with it. Like, you know, life is hard. Figure it out. Like, and there is sometimes that is true. Like there are certain things you come up against that are just, you just have to kind of work through.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of it, working through it, whether it's,
yep.
you know, because so many things are related to, it feels like to me, to the mental aspect of it. And you want to take care of yourself physically, mm-hmm. mentally, spiritually, whatever that is for you. You know, that seems to be like a big component that for many, many years was just kind of like, oh, that's for people who are sick, or, oh, that's for people who are, you know, schizophrenic or whatever. But it's like, it really is something that we can all take care of ourselves about. That's what I'm trying to get at in terms of like this month being Mental Health Awareness Month. Don't let it slide. Like take the moment to say, hey, what's going on in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you guys have so many resources available. You can of course go to NAMI Juno, NAMIJuno.org. You can find out about all these different support groups that they have, all the different programs that they have. There might be something there for you or a friend that you know might be in need. And so that's really cool. So Danny, I do want to talk about this month specifically and what you have planned. I know you have a big event later in the month,
mm-hmm.
but are there other things that are going on in and around this month?
We have our support groups that are still happening. We have a training at Northern Light Church. I believe it's May. Oh, I just looked it up before I got here.
It's on the website.
It's on the website. And I'm blanking, of course, now that I'm on the air.
That's okay.
But it is integrating faith with healing from either suicidal ideation or suicide loss.
Okay.
Okay. And those are kind of like our big things that we have going on this month.
And then you can go ahead. Tell me about the event on the 23rd.
Yes. So May 23rd is our NAMI walk. It is an opportunity for us to celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month by building community for folks who want to support mental health, helped us to reduce stigma. I think also kind of going back to our conversation that we just had, having that a medical diagnosis, I think, has also helped to reduce stigma.
Mm.
Kind of like you said, that it's a it's an invisible illness. We can't see it. Mm-hmm. How somebody would react to a broken arm is very different than how somebody would act that I'm having a mental health day.
Right.
Both of them are equally
they're valid.
Valid.
Yeah.
And so this this is part of how we're trying to celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month.
Okay.
I also have a personal connection with Mental Health Awareness Month. In 2017, Mental Health Awareness Month was the first time that I publicly spoke about my own mental health. Mm. So I'm a little nerdy about Mental Health Awareness Month. It's very personal. And it's also a fundraiser because we are trying to keep our programs free for all of our participants. This is a weird time for funding for nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we received a 15% reduction in funding from the Alaska Department of Health, the Division of Behavioral Health, which resulted in a $45,000 reduction in funding.
Mm.
All beneficiaries of the Alaska Department of Health received that reduction in funding of 15%. We're expecting a reduction of funding from the city. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority granted us a one-time $75,000 grant last year, but we're unsure of what programs we're going to be qualified for this year. We also applied for the Rural Health Transformation Program, which is awesome. A lot of nonprofits applied for that program,
mm-hmm.
But we just don't know what that's going to look like. 1,800 organizations applied for that grant.
Wow.
Or excuse me, let me rephrase that. 1,800 organizations, there were 1,800 letters of inquiry that were submitted.
Yeah.
And so we're all trying to figure out which letters of inquiry were accepted so that we can apply for those grants. But there's just a lot of uncertainty on what the future is going to look like.
Yeah.
So
this fundraiser is a big deal.
It's going to help us to bridge any gaps that we may have with funding.
I see.
So
this is on May 23rd.
Yes.
It's at 10 o'clock in the morning at mm-hmm. Sandy Beach. And do I register for it by going to namijuno.org?
So you can go through our website to get to the registration site.
Okay.
It's also namiwalks.com/Juno.
Okay.
We also have a Facebook event. It is free to register. So if fundraising is not your thing, come on, hang out with us anyway.
Right.
We're going to have Steady Going as our musical guest.
Yeah.
Cool. Local Juno musical guest. Aaron, our executive director, he's going to be our grill master that night,
nice.
That day. We're going to be at the Pioneer Pavilion. It'll be about a 1 mile walk. As long as there's no snow, I think it's going to be a beautiful day.
Hopefully there's no snow May 23rd,
Dan. No, my gosh. I think we're all fine with rain at this point.
Yeah,
as long as it's not snowing.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah, so we're just really excited to enjoy some time outside, just celebrating mental health with some movement, some connection.
And some good food
and good music.
Yeah, I love it. And I think that I don't know if it's the national theme, but I was looking it up,
mm-hmm.
And it seems like this year's theme is In Every Story, There's Strength. I love that.
Yeah.
For NAMI. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I know there's another one for mental health. What was the group that started the Mental Health Awareness Month? It was Mental Health America.
Yep.
Right? And they have a theme that is More Good Days Together. But NAMI's theme is In Every Story, There's Strength, which I think is really cool because that's what I love about our show is everybody, you know, the stories that people have. Like you're talking a little bit about, you know, you're celebrating. What is it going to be for you? It's going to be 9 years.
So
next year will be 10 years. That's so fantastic. When you come back next year, we'll hear a little bit more about your story, maybe.
Okay.
That'll be great. I'm on your 10th anniversary. That'll be cool. But it's Mental Health Awareness Month. It's all of May. There's a fundraiser, NAMI Walk, on mm-hmm. May 23rd at 10 a.m. at Sandy Beach. And you can get the link at namijuno.org, right?
Yep.
Awesome.
Or on our Facebook page.
You're everywhere, right?
We try to be. Facebook, Instagram, on our website. And also with Mental Health Awareness Month, something that we really try to remind our Juno community is that if you have questions about mental health or you need access to resources, give us a call, send us an email. We have a contact us link on our page. That's what we're here for. We're here to get folks connected to the resources that they need to live their healthiest life.
What's the phone number before we go?
Our phone number is 907-463-4251.
Always make a phone call if in need, for sure.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Danny Gunthich, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO, and here now is this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Jill Freitas. In southern Oklahoma, the Chickasaw Nation is planting trees to combat climate change. The project is also ensuring that Chickasaw culture gets passed down to the next generation. In this encore episode, KOSU's Sarah Lisi has more.
You guys like playing in dirt?
Yeah.
What we need.
On a crisp fall morning, Chickasaw Nation Head Start students gather in a field at the Okeonolly Preserve, located on the tribe's reservation between Oklahoma City and Dallas.
Hey guys, let's go. Let's go plant the tree. Come on.
About 20 children are grabbing soil and packing it together to create a healthy foundation for 25 young trees. It's an effort funded by a U.S. Forest Service grant under the Inflation Reduction Act.
Here, Mavis, just put the dirt in there.
Fighter. 4-year-old Mavis June Wilson and her mom Julie were among the group participating.
What did you feel when you were planting a tree? Did you feel happy, excited?
I feel happy and excited.
Julie says she's Seminole, and Mavis is both Seminole and Chickasaw. Seeing Mavis cultivate a relationship with the land this young, Julie says, is important to her.
We used to live off the land, whether it was going and gathering or hunting or whatever, you know, the land always provides.
Yeah, that's a big root.
But the lands they are standing on now were not open fields before. There used to be more trees that prevented erosion along the Blue River and surface water runoff during storms. Katie Gillis works as the Director of Conservation at the Nature Conservancy, a global nonprofit that partnered with the Chickasaw Nation in 2012 to protect the lands at the Okeonolly Preserve. Gillis says this area was hardwood bottomland before colonization.
And after these lands left Chickasaw ownership, the ranchers cleared it entirely and turned it into meadow. And so we are actively working to restore it.
Restoring the land to its natural state will ultimately help combat climate change. More native trees can help filter pollution and cool the community when it's hot outside. But experts say that works best when the right species and number of trees are planted.
A few years ago, we planted over 4,000 trees and put sinuosity back in the creeks that feed the Blue River here to keep water on this land longer and to raise the water table. So the 25 trees that the Chickasaws want to plant here fits in perfectly with our restoration efforts.
But this work, if done correctly, isn't just good for the local environment. It's also personal to the Chickasaw people, says Jeannie Mosley, the Chickasaw Nation Sustainability Director.
And the trees that we're planting today are all culturally significant trees. So we have bur oak, we have pecan, and these are all trees that Chickasaw people used to survive when they first came over here from our homelands.
Mosley descends from three tribes in Oklahoma, the Chickasaw, Kiowa, and Comanche. Like Julie Wilson, she remembers the imprint the land left on her people through her father's teachings.
He said that whenever you think about land, you have to realize that people died for it. So the people that have survived, it just kind of shows me that I am honored to take care of this land because I'm kind of keeping their memory alive.
The memory also lives on now with this new generation of young people like Mavis.
She's graduating this year, and this is something that she gets to do, and another 10, 15 years, she gets to come back and actually look at the tree that she planted when she was almost 5 years old.
The tree Mavis helped plant is an oak tree. In front of it is a little nameplate showing both its English and Chickasaw names.
The tree symbolizes her, and she's going to go through changes in life, and so is that tree. And I hope that she remembers that no matter what happens in life, changes are always going to happen, whether it's going to be good or whether it's going to be bad. And it's just part of life.
The trees and the land here at the preserve are a reminder of Chickasaw history. And that no matter the adversity, these children and the land are finding ways to prevail.
Good job, everyone.
For KOSU, I'm Sarah Lisi.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Jill Freitas for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. First Friday for May is here, and tomorrow at Alaska Robotics Gallery, it's a two-for-one. It's artist Rob Royce and author Bridget Smith. They, along with co-owner Pat Race of the Alaska Robotics Gallery, join me now in the studio. Gunath Chi, Sha'iadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio today. Wasiati, Bridget, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Glad to be here.
Excellent, thank you so much, and thank you for the book.
You're very welcome.
And Rob, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Howdy, Boston.
Excellent, so much fun to have you in the studio. And Pat, thank you for coming in. Wasiati, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Okay. I want to just start with you real quick.
Sure. And
it's called Alaska Robotics Gallery. Obviously, there's all kinds of, you know, you're known for games and comics and your books and your artwork. And when did you all start having things? Have you been doing this since you moved into the new space, like art shows a lot of the times now?
I mean, that's a great question, because this is, goes back to the roots of how I met Rob, is that, you know, we've been hosting artists at the gallery since we opened in 2012. But prior to that, we had the Ruby Room Gallery. And this connects to Bridget's daughter, Sarah, as well. So Sarah Asper-Smith ran the Ruby Room, which was connected to our office space in the Emporium. Rob would come in and do life drawing nights. And that's really how I got to know Rob, as he would contribute to art shows there and ran the sessions. And then Bridget's daughter. I mean, what a great connection. I feel like you threw a dart and hit a bullseye.
So you've been doing it since the start, basically, like supporting artists and having them in the space and being a part of it. And now you have this wonderful big space up there on the corner, next to Amalga Distillery.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the
yeah, right
the
up the hill there.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy to be here today as a hype man. I love Rob's work. I love Bridget's work. These are two people who have put so much of their heart and soul into the Juno arts community, and I'm glad that we get to celebrate them, because
I love it.
But see both of them oftentimes behind the scenes, and it's nice to put them out front.
That's so cool. So, Rob, let's start with you. And I do have the page you sent me, which is some of the work that's going to be presented at the gallery. So this is for people who are on the live stream. You'll be able to see a little bit of the kind of work that Rob is working with here. So tell me a little bit about, because he mentioned life drawing, tell me a little bit about your work. Like, what is your style and where does it come from?
Let's see. I just wanted to look at what we're looking at on the live stream here. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I spent a lot of time drawing things as they looked, and then I got bored with that and started drawing things in a way that I wanted them to look, sort of.
Interesting.
Or things about them that I thought was interesting, you know, lines, shapes, various combinations of those that look interesting to me. And what I've been doing over the last, it's been a while now, is I've been flipping things around in my head and layering them on top of each other. I take a there's a process where you're warming up where you do these things called gesture sketches, which are just real quick drawings, and I'll take those and erase them and draw the more complete drawings on top of those. And that's kind of what I repeat with my paintings, is go through that process with them.
Oh,
different
that's
layers, watercolor, acrylic, graphite.
I see. I love this idea of, like, seeing the world, how you want it to be as opposed to how it is. Because obviously there's those – in school you learn like the still life, right? Like learn like, oh, I got to paint the bowl of fruit or whatever and I got to make it exact. But that seems – I don't know. It seems like this style that you have is more interesting to me anyway, because then it's really coming from a place of your vision, your work, your sort of viewpoint – on the things that you're seeing. So what do you draw? I see you have a lot of images. It looks like you have mountains, but it also looks like you have people.
Yeah, so those mountains are actually people.
Oh, those are people.
Yeah. So I...
And the people are mountains.
Yeah. Like the sleeping lady kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's... so I'll draw the same shape over and over and over again and kind of within itself. And, you know, so in particular, there's like the one on the top left there that has a private story. That model there was the model. We were all talking and laughing and stuff. And they were like, oh, you can't tell anybody this story. This is a private story. So that's where the title came from.
Interesting. I see.
Yeah. And that's so he's, you know, reclining back. His legs are kind of bent and up there. And then the torso is that kind of black part. That's in the middle there. And so I kind of drew over it over and over again, and then redid the head down in the two black shapes underneath, and then painted it green and yellow to make it kind of look like mountains.
I love this idea of layering, too, like that you keep drawing over the same area, or painting, I guess. Are these all paintings?
These are all paintings, but they're all based on drawings.
They're all based on drawings,
I actually rip my drawings out of my sketchbook, and I stick them onto plywood, and then paint over them.
Oh, I see. That's really cool. So these are going to be is this the artwork that will be displayed at the gallery tomorrow?
It is. Okay. All of those pieces there, and one of them I'm really proud of. It's the second one from the right. That's the first one I have been called a cartoonist.
Oh,
because of that one.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's cool. And you can see all of these in advance if you want to. Go to rob-royce.squarespace.com and you can find this page. Or just show up tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Just look at them on the wall. Yeah.
At the actual wall and maybe even purchase one.
You know, and there's something, you know, back in the day when I did a Juno afternoon, it was Jeff Brown. He would always ask me what food we had.
Oh, interesting.
And so we got some pickles and cream cheese wrapped in ham.
Okay.
Feta balls in walnuts and some legit onion dip with Ruffles.
Legit onion dip.
Yeah.
What's the difference between legit onion dip and non-legit onion dip?
It's made with the Lipton powder. Onion soup powder.
Shout out Jeff Brown, right?
Yeah. We're going to have A-plus snacks.
Yeah. And if you're in the know, you can ask for some Twinkies or Ho-Hos as well.
Oh, Ho-Hos. You and me, brother. That's my crack right there. Is a good ho-ho. Anyway, that's so great. So tomorrow, this is going to be happening during First Friday, the hours. Are you doing 4 to 7 or 4:30 to 7? What's the hours?
We usually get started about 4:30 or so. And
okay.
We're open kind of until people stop coming. So 7, 8, sometimes 9. Just kind of depends on the traffic patterns.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And that's tomorrow. And then the show will be up for the whole month.
Yeah, show's up through the month. And I encourage people to come out. It's a lot of fun. First Fridays are great. And we're gonna have a student jazz band in there playing at the beginning, so that should be a lot of fun
too.
Michael Busey's bringing his crew down, and they've got like a seven-piece crew, and
what?
It's gonna be
Rob didn't even know this was happening.
No, it's gonna be, coming. I didn't know it was
seven
piece. It was a trio.
It's gonna be a hoot. Yeah, Friday's gonna be very lively up at the Alaska Robotics Gallery.
I love that. And as I mentioned, you can find more of Rob's work and more about Rob at rob-royce.squarespace.com. It's a wonderful website, and it's the one of, I guess there's three things. There's a jazz band, there's Rob Roy's art, and then there's Bridget Smith, who's going to be tomorrow, is going to be signing copies of her book called Godsend. So, Bridget, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. Tell me a little bit about Godsend.
So Godsend is a book that I started probably 9 years ago. I can't say that I worked full time on it, but off and on. And I started it, I think, because I saw an erosion of civility.
Mm.
And I thought maybe we could get help from Archangel Michael and Guardian Angels.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had a Catholic girlhood, and I came away with a very strong sense of social justice and a strong belief in Guardian Angels. So I thought, I'd like to bring these Guardian Angels in and make them part of the story. So,
and you're not only bringing them into the story, but you're bringing them into Juneau. This is set in Juneau.
It's actually set in a place called Paradise Hot Springs.
Oh, okay.
Which is a little town in southeast Alaska that you can only reach by float plane, and it's sort of an amalgam of many little places in southeast.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So you made up your own place.
I made up my own place.
I love that, because then you can do whatever you want with the world. When I was looking at this, I was like, oh, this seems like we're talking about Juneau a lot.
It does, but it's smaller than Juneau, and yeah. And my sister said, how can you come up with such a small place and have such good restaurants? And I said, I can do whatever I want. This is my place.
It's my town. I made it. They have good restaurants,
and,
darn it.
And Michael, the archangel, loves good food, so yeah. he needs places to go.
So tell me just a little bit of the plot. Like, give me the start of what happens with the story.
Okay, the start is probably that guardian angels are getting burned out because of their charges. The people that they're guarding are not behaving well, and it's really hard to be a guardian angel. And they're having to go through therapy in heaven. And
Rob's laughing. You can laugh. It's all good. It sounds funny.
Well, it's lighthearted and it's funny, but there are serious parts too.
Yeah.
And so Source, who is God, sends Michael to this little place, Paradise Hot Springs, and to look for good people.
Okay.
And Michael is afraid that Source is going to do something drastic. And he goes to Paradise Hot Springs, where he finds many good people, and he also finds some not so good people too. And it kind of goes from there. The guardian angels are there; they're part of the scene. He meets people. He discovers that being a human, because he's incarnated, being a human is very difficult. And he finds.
Tell me about it, Michael.
And he is subject to the same emotions we are. He becomes angry. He has compassion. He wants to kill somebody. He all of these things. And he realizes, even though he's known humanity for millennia, he realizes how tough it is to be a human.
It's this is so off the beaten track, but I just watched the latest episode of Survivor, and it was really funny because Jeff Probst, the host, like participated for the first time in the 25 seasons of Survivor. He'd never done it before. And it was really funny because he realized how hard it was. For all these years, he's been picking on people, telling them to work harder and stuff, and then he tried to do it and he couldn't do it. So you just made me think of that same idea, because it is interesting when somebody who's not part of it, like he's been just guarding people, right?
And he's incarnated before, but he's really feeling it this time.
Yeah.
He is, because of the lack of civility, and he wants to bring it back. He wants people to be decent. He wants people to be good.
I love that.
And he's enlisting the guardian angels to work harder on people.
Yeah, for sure. And I know this isn't your first book, Bridget. I'm really curious, though, because you wrote Death of an Alaska Princess. There's a gardening book that you've written. You've done some other publications for Boston Globe, et cetera, Christian Science Monitor. So when you're wanting to publish a book, because I think people think about writing, like, How do you get from into your brain onto the page and then get it actually published? This is the part I'm working about. Are you self-publishing? Is somebody publishing for you?
This is what's called a hybrid publisher.
Okay.
It's not self-publishing, which, by the way, I did with the gardening book. But with Death of an Alaskan Princess, it was St. Martin's Press, a New York publisher. This is a hybrid press that's based out of Cambridge, in England.
What is a hybrid press?
Hybrid press is that the author takes half the responsibility, half the financial responsibility.
Okay.
The publisher takes the other half, and you share half in whatever profits you might get. And they handle all of the printing, the distribution, the editing, etc.
I see. And it's because it says Vanguard Press as well as Pegasus Publishers.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. It's just interesting because what I find fascinating, I know we have The art in this town is amazing. Like, we have so many wonderful visual artists. The one that really surprises me, though, is how many authors we actually have in Juneau. Like, it seems like this is a great place to be a writer, because there's obviously you're surrounded by this wonderful beauty that you have. But then just, I don't know, maybe the solitude of living in Juneau and the community sense, but also because writing is such a solitary sort of effort. But then... are you part of like a writers group, or do you talk with other writers that are here in Juneau?
I'm part of 49 Writers, which is a statewide group you're probably familiar with. Yeah. But what I wanted to say is that this community encourages arts in a way that doesn't happen anywhere else. And I think Pat will and Rob too, you know, that we have incredible encouragement to write, to do art. I was part of a writing group with Gene Rogers and Dale DeArmond and Nancy Farrell and Susie Gregg Fowler for many, many years.
Wow.
And Susie and I are the only ones left of that group. But I've had encouragement from so many people. My friends who read many reiterations of this book and were willing to give me feedback on it. You know, this community supports artists and writers.
I love that. Yeah, this one thing I love about Juneau is that we support artists in this town. And let's keep it going, people. Let's keep it going,
let's
for sure.
Let's keep it going, yes.
So, Pat, this is tomorrow at Alaska Robotic Gallery, 4:30 to whenever, 7, 8, whenever people stop showing up. There's a jazz band. There's Rob Roy's artwork going to be on the wall. Rob will be there with some yummy food and authentic or the real deal onion dip. And then Bridget's going to be there signing books. Now, you're going to sign books tomorrow, but then will the books be there for a little bit of time after that?
I think we'll have them for a while, but I think that probably the best place to pick up books in town is like Hearthside or Rainy Retreat.
Sure.
We specialize in like comics and graphic novels and things like that.
Right, so, but you might keep a couple copies around.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, we got a box of them, so but I'm assuming they'll sell out tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah, I love that.
Bridget's bringing a bigger box now.
Bridget, Rob, and Pat, thank you so much. Gunnar Cheese for being here today and telling us a little bit about what's going on down there for First Friday. I love First Friday in this town. It's one of the best days of the month.
Yes, it is.
Yep. I appreciate it. Gunnar Cheese for being here today.
Yeah, thank you, Austin.
Okay, up next is going to be Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. You've likely seen Brian Wallace around town, and odds are he was carrying a camera. Wallace has been taking photos of Juneau people, places, and happenings since he was a kid, and he has worked as a photojournalist at the Juneau Empire for nearly 30 years. He comes from a family of artists. His father, the late Amos Wallace, was a renowned carver, and Wallace takes pictures of the present for future generations. He is working to memorialize the past, his own family, and Juneau's.
My name is Brian Wallace, semi-world-famous photographer here in Juneau, Alaska. Well, I was a photographer for the local newspaper for 28 years, 6 months. So I've seen a lot of people grow up, a lot of people around town, a lot of people recognize me. You know, it's hard for me to sneak out of town or be anywhere. I like trying to be anonymous when I travel. Last time I was in New York City, I saw on a Facebook post, someone said, oh my God, I just saw Brian Wallace crossing Times Square. She gave the whole rundown of what I was wearing, what direction I was heading, you know, so that kind of blew my cover. You know, I was trying to sneak out of town and I was caught. I think around fifth or sixth grade, my older brother Roger, who was taking photographs for the Junior Douglas High School Totem Yearbook, and I kind of wanted to copy him with taking pictures and developing images. So that you know, seemed like magic to me, you know, just take a picture, use the enlarger, project something down onto a piece of paper, dump it in chemicals, and all of a sudden, like magic, you know, the image appears. Technology is real amazing now, the digital. You know, back when I started, I had like maybe two rolls, 72 exposures to cover a whole story. And now I take like several hundred to several thousand. I photograph Celebration. There's thousands of dancers. So there's going to be many thousands of images. And so narrowing down to, you know, 20, 25 decisive moments that would define the event is it's a lot of work. I'm a full-time employee at the Alaska State Museum. One of my jobs that I do is to photograph some artifacts. Photographing the hands-on objects as well as other stuff that people aren't allowed to hold, but we need a visual record of that. It just amazes me photographing, you know, the old Tlingit artifacts, the blankets, Even the mysterious ivory artifacts that were dug out of the tundra, we have no idea what they were used for, but some person made it, you know, long before the Egyptian pyramids were built. It's been very thrilling for me to photograph all of my late father's work. He has some totem poles in museums in New York City, and I made pilgrimages there to photograph it. And one big one in Cincinnati, you know, I've traveled throughout the whole country trying to track down all the totem poles that he made. I'm still looking for the ones that he carved for Disneyland back in the 1950s, but their archivist hasn't been able to locate them for me. I'm trying to round up as much artwork that my dad did. He did literally hundreds, maybe thousands of bracelets, and they're all out there in the world. And I've maybe photographed about 20 or 30 of them so far. Anytime someone says, hey, my mom had a bracelet that was given to her in 1961, says, can I photograph it? I'm a big fan of my dad and his work, and I just still want it to fade away. I'm not a trained historian, but history has always been like one of my favorite subjects since high school. So I've really pursued my images to preserve things for posterity. When I put photographs out, people say, oh, that's great. That reminds me of this certain time. Or if I find photographs of an elder who has passed, but someone who I photographed 40 years ago, I could show them the images, and that kind of makes a lot of people's days.
That was Juno photographer Brian Wallace talking about his love of photography as a way to preserve both the past and the present for future generations on this week's Tongass Voices.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tomorrow, May 1st, marks the first Juno Made in Alaska Market. Made in Alaska is a program that certifies Alaska businesses which meet the program standard of 51% of being made, manufactured, or handcrafted in the state. The market tomorrow will feature jewelry, fiber arts, skincare products, home goods and decor, artwork, photography, and more. It's going to be awesome. I'm joined now by Claire Campbell from Anchorage. She's joining us via the power of the interwebs. Hi, Claire. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Ganesh for being here. So first off, tell me a little bit about, so the Made in Alaska program is a state of Alaska program that sort of certifies businesses, individuals, whoever it may be, who's making work in Alaska that is using 51% of it is made here. What does that mean, that 51%?
Yeah, so the Made in Alaska program, it's, like you said, the only state-guaranteed program that ensures that products that you're buying were made in the state by, you know, an Alaskan business. What we do is we certify products, not businesses. So okay. Any Alaskan business can apply to have their product certified as made in Alaska. And that just means that at least 51% of the value comes from the work that they're doing in the state. So you know that the product you're buying is made at least, you know, it's mostly
the majority is in Alaska.
And the reason we say that.
Yeah.
Okay, the reason we say that is, you know, as we know, a lot of materials just can't be sourced here. So a lot of people use materials from outside, but they don't automatically get disqualified because.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So that's interesting thing is that the product is what is certified. So a business could be selling things that aren't made in Alaska, but then also things that are made in Alaska. So that's really kind of cool. And individuals, because I know you said like there's handcrafted stuff. So people who are like individual artists, can they also apply for this program and say, hey, my stuff is made in Alaska?
Yes. Yeah, we have a lot of artists in the program. Artists. We also have manufacturers of like industrial products. You know, there's a company called Anchorage Sand and Gravel. There's Alaska Insulated Panels. They're in South Central Alaska, and they make like insulated panels for building materials, essentially. They're certified. So it's all across the board. There's coffee roasters. All kinds of different products.
So that's really cool. Now, tomorrow is the first time we've had a Made in Alaska market in Juneau. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, this is our first one. So we just We've done two markets in Anchorage, and they were such a great success. We wanted to expand and try out Juneau as well.
I love that. So what came, where was the impetus for the idea to do markets in the first place? Was that just something you all were thinking about wanting to get out there?
Yeah. So the Made in Alaska program, our goal ultimately is to promote Alaskan made products. We don't have a huge capacity. We don't have any full-time staff that, you know, run the program. It's me. But we do what we can where we can to help these businesses promote their products beyond just being able to use the logo, you know, just beyond just having that guarantee. We do a Manufacturer of the Year award. We decided to start trying these markets as another way to help promote Made in Alaska businesses.
So are you working with somebody here in Juneau to get it all coordinated?
Yeah. So, we're a state of Alaska program. So we have people. We're putting on the market at the Sea Alaska at the Sea Alaska building. It's the office building, not the Heritage Center. So they're next door to each other. But we're working with them on the venue. And I also have some colleagues down there that are helping out. So
I see. The plaza and the
helping us put this on.
Yeah, and that inside space is really cool, as well as the outside space. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'll be outside at all, but that's going to be kind of cool. And then, are we going to be seeing products that are predominantly made here in Southeast, or are there products that are going to be represented from other places around the state?
Yeah, so we have vendors from all around. Most of them are Southeast. We have several Juneau businesses. We have someone from Haines. We have someone from Hoonah. But we also have someone from Fairbanks who's mm-hmm. flying down. And we have someone from Palmer. So most of the businesses are closer, really just because of logistics. I think it's people want to, sell at a market that's near them. So but we do have people from all over the place. So it's
that's
be really great.
And I was mentioning some of the things that are going to be there. We're going to have jewelry, fiber art, skincare products, home goods, decor. Mm-hmm. And so when you were putting together the market, did you just reach out to everybody in the program and say, hey, who wants to be part of the market in Juneau?
Yes. Yeah, we did. We sent out, we have, an email listserv that we reach out to all our permit holders that way, and we contacted everybody, and we got a good number of applications from a good variety. So
that's really cool. Well, hopefully the weather is going to be great for you tomorrow, and it's going to be possible, because I feel like if you've done two in Anchorage and then this, you're reaching out to Juneau now to do this one, like if it goes well, this is something that we might see on an annual or semi-annual basis or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really hope so. We hope we can continue doing these regularly, hopefully annual. Our Anchorage market that we did in November was a huge success. So we're definitely going to be doing that one again this year. And this Juneau one, obviously if we were to do it again, it's a year out. So we don't have any firm plans in the works. But yeah, we really hope that we can make this a regular thing.
And what time is the market going to be happening tomorrow?
It's from 3:30 to 7:30 in the afternoon. So
wow, you are hitting right in the first Friday angle right there. You got it. That's the perfect time to do it, especially if you get out early, because first Friday, most of the people start doing stuff around 4:30. So you can hit the Made in Alaska market first before all the products are gone, right? Because that's going to happen. And then get yourself out there for your first Friday. Before we end today, Claire, I wanted to ask, so if I'm a person who's maybe an individual business or an artist, or if I've got a product that I have making in Alaska, what is the process for me to get the stamp of approval in the Made in Alaska program?
Yeah, great question. So it's a pretty easy process. You can learn all about it if you go to our website, madeinalaska.org. We're also on social media at By the Bear on Instagram and Facebook. But all the information about how to apply for the permit is right there on our website.
Oh, that's great. And is it a long process?
No, it's so there's an application that you fill out online, and then usually the turnaround time, you know, for us to process it is a couple of business days at most. The only big prerequisite is you do have to have a business license in order to apply.
So you have to have a business license. And is there any cost to applying for the program?
It's $25 a year.
$25 a year, but you get that cool Made in Alaska sticker, right, that you can put on your stuff or your products. That's really cool. I love that. And this market is happening tomorrow. It's May 1st. It's going from 3:30 to 7:30. It's going to be over there at the Sea Alaska Plaza. Hopefully we get some good weather. Are you going to be outside or are you going to be mostly inside that in the building?
We're going to be inside the building. So we have that first floor. They have like a newly renovated big conference space and we'll be in there.
I see. Okay. So even if it's raining, the products won't get all wet. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Claire Campbell, who I guess you are the sole, you run the program. It's you.
I have help. I definitely,
but you are running the program Made in Alaska for the state of Alaska. Claire Campbell, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us about this awesome new thing that may become an annual thing here in Juneau, the Made in Alaska Market. Get out and see it tomorrow, May 1st, during First Friday. Claire, Gwyneth Cheese, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Have a great day. And that is going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. It has been such an awesome show today. Really appreciate all of our guests coming on and telling us all about the good things going on in this town. Keep it going, Juno. You can go to tinyurl.com/madeinak to find out more about the program that we just talked about. On tomorrow's show, we have an overview of Tlingit and Haida's foster care program, plus Juno Jazz and Classics stops in to share about the Spring Festival, which is already begun and is going to be going strong for the next week or so. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives over on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent, and programming support comes from Country Financial, Hanson Grass Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tongass Federal Credit Union. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gwyneth Cheese, have a fantastic Juno evening.
Live and local, KTOO 104.3 Juno and KAUK 91.7 Juno, Auk Bay.